Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today we have a different day, a different kind of podcast, and I'm excited about it. Your thoughts, Elizabeth?
Well, this was kind of my idea. So my thoughts are, it's a great idea.
This was your idea. So if you're not familiar, we launched the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Justin Whitmell Early and I have partnered up to just help fathers in any way from our own disposition and our own experience, and really more from our brokenness, not our expert disposition. And man, we have had the most overwhelming response from so many men and so many of their wives as well. So many of you wonderful wives and ladies that are listening and have been listening. It's just been a huge gift. And so what we decided to do today was we actually want to release on this channel, on the Intentional Parents Podcast, one of the episodes. We haven't done this before, but if you ever listen to podcasts, obviously some podcasts will do this from time to time. And what we want to do is simply release an episode from the Fatherhood Podcast and just give you kind of a sampling of what we're doing, what we're talking about. And so what you're going to hear in just a couple of minutes is Justin and I talking. You'll hear the actual intro of that podcast and you'll hear the whole conversation. It's a little bit of a longer one, but man, is it a really deep one. It's an important one. Also want to let everybody know there's some definite mature content in this as far as topics. So if you have little ones listening or little ears in the car, maybe put in some earbuds, but really excited about the content and really just wanted to have everybody that follows this platform be able to share and listen.
Yeah. And what I love about what you guys are doing is I feel like you're making the content really palpable for dads in a world that's maybe saturated by telling them they need to do better, be better men. I feel like you guys are laying it out in a way that is really hopeful and something that anybody could really like just latch on to. And what I also love is that even though it's geared towards fathers, everything you guys talk about is applicable for mothers as well. Mm-hmm. I've listened to every episode, not just because I'm your wife and I want to be involved in the work that you're doing, but because they're so good. And this episode specifically, I just feel like is so important. It's on knowing your story. And really, the meat of it is on knowing the story of your family and of your parents and where they come from. Whether you had great parents or whether you had horrible parents or somewhere in between, which is probably most of us, because no parent is perfect. But really understanding where your parents came from. It doesn't negate the areas that they may have hurt you or the things that they weren't able to offer you. It doesn't excuse, but it does explain a lot and it frames the story in a really important way. And so you guys kind of do a deep dive into that.
Yeah.
And then what we're actually going to do is next week, we will have mom with us in the studio and we're going to further this conversation. She's doing a ton of research on this topic right now because obviously it's so prevalent in our culture for the younger generation, maybe you and I's age or even a little bit younger, to completely reject their parents. And in that conversation, there's not a lot of talk about understanding the full picture of the story. And where is Jesus in all of that? And where is his redemption? He can redeem generation after generation after generation. And so we're going to kind of probably ping pong off of this episode a little bit and deep dive a little bit more. So if this topic is of interest to you, if this is something that you're wrestling with currently in your own family, or you're close to somebody who is, and you just have any questions or things that you would like us to address in that episode, feel free to send us, tell them what they should do, because I don't know.
Send a voice memo, a 1 minute voice memo with your name, where you're from, and just email that to hello@intentionalparents.org. And we would love to be able to even play your voice and listen to your question together. And thank you, sweetie. Yeah, it's been a fun project. We just finished up season two. So season two will be out in just a little bit here. And so here's what you can do. If you are interested, or as you're listening to this podcast, if it's a helpful thing, you can head over to the Intentional Fatherhood podcast. It's its own channel. You can check that out. Intentionalfatherhood.org is another website. We have our own social media and all that. And the reason we're wanting to do that is because we're connected, but we also want to have a space for the men to really land and process. So we have a bunch of different things over there you can check out. And then if you are there and you're liking it, subscribe it, leave a comment, rate it. That's helpful. Or our podcast as well. That's always such a gift. But enjoy this conversation with myself and Justin Whitmell Early.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood podcast. Justin and I are here with you today.
We're back.
We're back. Episode 5. One quick note. You made the most amazing breakfast sandwiches this morning.
I appreciate you saying that.
We need to talk about, like, it's funny.
I'm not much in the kitchen, but at breakfast, dude, I can roll.
And let's just be real. So Elizabeth, we're away at a place recording, and Elizabeth sent us with sourdough, fresh made sourdough.
Some really good sourdough.
That has been great. Yeah. And it's been fun. Like, I feel like an old married couple where, you know how you just don't talk, you just fall into your roles. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You're just like, at whatever point without talking, you're like in the kitchen making breakfast. But dude, those sandwiches, like what, bacon, eggs, cheese.
Cheddar cheese,
Cholula,
toasted sourdough.
Cholula, chipotle, Tabasco, like that sauce. And then I never had this, bananas in almond milk, like just together, like as a banana
syrup.
Yeah,
that was my nice little touch.
Dude, I'm telling you. Justin Early in the breakfast.
It's fun to let people know where we're at. So we're recording these episodes in Bend, Oregon.
Yep.
Like 1 degree outside today.
Today, yeah.
We've been staying in a cabin together, talking about all this, getting to know each other.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It's been a fun.
And now we invite you into our episode 5 here.
Episode 5. Yeah, we kind of decided, what if we just got away? It'd be much easier for life if we just got away and had a couple of days and just went all in. And it's been a really great experience. And plus the breakfast sandwiches.
And speaking of going all in, we're about to go deep here.
We're about to go deep. Yes. So maybe just to set up, and please help me with this, Justin. But again, you can go to intentionalfatherhood.org. You can see the paradigm we're talking about, but there's two different axes that we're going to be talking about today. And not every, you know, season or episode will have all of these, you know, dichotomies, but this is the foundational season in many ways. And we need to set this up so that as we continue to talk and go deep on all these different topics plus more, that there's some foundation. So the two things we want to talk about today are not only family past, but also family future. So next week, we're going to talk about future legacy, your family now, a lot of like, what is it like to live in this now? But today we want to talk about knowing your story and how your past greatly affects your present.
Yeah.
And all of us have different stories. So before we dive into that, I do also want to say thank you to everyone who has rated and subscribed. That has been so awesome and left comments.
Do it. It's so encouraging and interesting to hear your questions, see your comments.
Yes. And then on questions, let them know what we're doing with that.
Send us your questions, voice memo. Hello, I am blank from blank. And then, you know, I prefer state your question in the form of a question, but Brooke is open to just state a statement. Tell us something. Ask a question.
Encourage it. You can use it to encourage as well.
I will take it. I'll take it.
And then send that to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. But yes, we do want to hear. We're going to gather those and do some episodes. We're excited about that. But yeah, let's talk about the past. Calm, mellow stuff.
Yeah. I mean, go look at the diagram. This will help you. This is the axes we're talking about here is know your story. Mm-hmm. We've all come from somewhere and we can't really build our family present or our family legacy until we've done the hard work of looking into our family past. And I call that hard work because often this is the shadow land. This is the place of difficulty. This is the traumas, the brokenness, the frustrations that we've come from. Also blessings. We'll talk about both of those. But I think it's important first to just be honest about the years the locusts might have eaten, the problems in our past. So
I can't wait to talk about that. Well, and the phrase that we kind of put together for this specific episode that would maybe be the summary, the surmise of the episode is how your past affects your fatherhood now and how God builds on your blessings and redeems your brokenness.
Yeah.
So that sentence, just one more time, how your past affects your fatherhood now and how God builds on your blessing and redeems your brokenness. That's really what we want to talk about.
It is.
And everyone has a different past. You know, we were even relating today and talking about how our upbringings, but also just our pasts and our stories are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually interesting that we kind of find ourselves in the same place today, but how we got to this place in the sense of even friendship or being thoughtful about what we're trying to do. Not perfect. We say this all the time, like just to try to be intentional fathers. Mm-hmm. Like we arrived at intentional fatherhood as an idea, you know, not even as an idea or a concept ministry wise, but to be those types of fathers with very different mediums. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Right? Like how you got here and how I got here and your reasons for why and my reasons for why are actually different, but we're in the same spot,
mm-hmm.
which I find is interesting. So I want to talk about, you know, that
part. It's making me think, we've said this a couple times in past episodes, your fatherhood needs you to blank.
Yes.
Here, I think it's your fatherhood needs you to know your story.
Mm.
Like you need to come to terms with your past so that you can bless your children instead of curse them.
Yes.
So I say we dive in.
Let's dive in.
You want to tell us a story?
I can tell you a story. Yeah. A verse that has been very helpful for me in my own personal life and story. And I've come by this many different times and it's always an encouragement. And it's actually, I only usually say the first part because I can't remember the whole verse. You know, those like you start.
I got a lot of those.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I love this part. You know,
and I'm really good at paraphrasing scripture. I'm really bad at quoting,
adding my own version of it. Yeah, we all do that sometimes, but the verse, and I often make it a prayer of my own life. Lord, would you repay or would you heal what the locusts have eaten? You know, you kind of mentioned that. And that's from Joel 2, 25 and 26. But what I actually love is when I actually go back to read it, I'm always reminded of the real richness. So let me just read that to you.
Yeah, give us the whole thing.
I will repay you for your years the locusts have eaten. So just sit with that for a second. That's important. And then it goes on, you will have plenty to eat until you are full. And then you will praise the name of the Lord your God who has worked wonders for you.
Wow.
Never again will my people be shamed. Like if that doesn't fit in a story of pain and trauma, I don't know what does. And what brings so much hope to me.
Yeah.
You know, any comments on that before I go
in? No, just that I got goosebumps when you read that only because you have to be honest about the years the locusts have eaten to know the joy of what that promise is.
Yeah.
Like if you haven't actually come face to face with that starvation of the past, like, oh, I was hurt. I lost something. Years of the crops, years of childhood, years of what ought to have been memories. If you don't face that pain, then you don't really understand the blessing that it is to say, I will restore it to you. I'm going to bring it back.
Yeah.
So I think you should.
Yeah.
You've had to face some pain. Why don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. And I think, it's important to say we all faced a certain level of pain. Being human is a painful experience on any front. Even as a father, your best efforts, you're going to hurt your kids and you're going to hurt your spouse and you're going to mess things up. Like that's a very common thing. You can't get around that. You can't avoid that. That will happen. But there's certain things that are just can become more extreme and they take a lot longer to work through and heal from. So I just want to make that really clear that everyone experiences pain. Some is really easily moved through and worked through and around, and some just take a lot longer. So I think it's important to share some of my experience and story. I think it's actually more important to start with a generation past. So I'm going to talk to you really fast about my dad's grandfather. Okay. And I actually want to talk to you about my mom's grandfather because it's super easy for us to get really angry at our parents for what they had, gave us, didn't do, did do. You know, we all do that. We all have certain feelings of like, well, I wish they would have done this, or I wish they would be this, or I wish they wouldn't have done that. That's all very real, but they're in the context of a story. You know, we've been talking about we're storied people.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a narrative. a kingdom narrative. We're in this beautiful storyline of the kingdom of God, and we are Jesus's people. If you're following him, you are Jesus's people within this story. Well, same with you and your family. It started right. way before right. you showed up on the scene, but we often just blame those directly, our neighbor, our parents, right? Like, who's closest? Ah, you guys. But it often starts way before. My dad grew up in different parts of the Midwest, but his parents were German immigrants that came in from Germany and moved here during just different low times in Germany. And my dad's grandfather was an insanely hard, abusive, painful person who was so abusive to his son, which is my dad's dad, my grandfather.
Okay.
And insanely abusive physically, emotionally, all the ways that you can be. And it was really interesting because as my dad, you know, grew up, he experienced a father who passed on a lot of what his father gave him, mm-hmm. you know, which is so common. Generational sin is such a real mm-hmm. thing. So my dad is the baby of 10 kids.
Oh my gosh.
10 kids. Yeah. Grandma and grandpa, my grandma and grandpa were Catholic, and it was basically like, you know, they didn't believe in birth control, the whole thing. So they had 10 kids. My dad was born at 7 months, 2 months prematurely, because my grandfather, who was incredibly physically abusive and sexually abusive to his wife and his kids, my grandma did something and he threw her against a parked car. Her stomach hit the car, and my dad, and she went into labor. And so my dad was born two months premature in a very traumatic way.
Mm, wow.
The way he came into the world was very traumatic.
Wow.
And so that was very common. And this episode, if you are listening, by the way, and if you have kids in the car, there are some elements and themes within this episode that will be very mature. And so this might be a moment to push pause, wait till you can listen to it, or put in some earbuds, something like that.
Well, good point.
Yeah. So, but that said, moving on, you've been warned. Diving in deeper, this traumatic experience within my grandfather, my dad's dad, led to him being an incredibly abusive human to his wife and kids. And again, like physically, mentally, and not to be overly graphic here, but there was sexual abuse on all fronts. Now, my dad was not sexually abused by his dad, but that's mm-hmm. primarily because my grandmother said, no, not this one. You can't have this one.
Oh my gosh.
But there was all sorts of levels of sexual abuse, including rape of his own daughters. That was the environment that my dad grew up in. Now, I know this is very heavy, but I'm telling you this to simply say, it is so easy for us to get mad at our parents and forget the context of the pain that they came from or live in.
Yes.
And so I do have a lot of different elements of pain, but I also have a lot of understanding of how good of a situation I had comparatively. So I'll get into that in a minute.
Can I just interject? I just feel like the spirit's prompting on us a little bit, because I'm learning a lot of this for the first time. Like, we've gotten to know each other, but you're telling me a level of your story that I haven't even heard. So most people out there, same thing.
Sure.
And when you face the past, years, the locusts have eaten, the trauma, or when you hear of it, like I'm hearing of it right now, it is not easy to know what to do with a story like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm literally sitting here like, I don't know what to say. I don't know to be like, wow, or oh, or my goodness. Yeah. And I just want to note that, because I think that's part of why this idea, this episode is so important, because it is not easy to face the stories of the past.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know what to do with it. Yeah. And that's precisely the point, that mm-hmm. we've got to do that work to stare into it and say, Lord, what do I do with this brokenness in the world, in my life, in my grandparents' lives, my father, my mother's life? But that's hard. And so I just want to note, anyone listening, if you don't know what to do with this, that's because it's hard to figure out what to do with this.
Yeah. And maybe just to help you know what to do with a little is to say, you don't have to be overly, I don't think you have to, it's a deep thing, because it hits you in the soul in a place that everyone goes, that's viscerally, dynamically, entirely evil and wrong. And what you feel is the evil, I think, that mm-hmm. exists in the world. The reason I tell you this story is because this is not as uncommon as it seems. It's just that it is not talked about. It's often not described, and it's often not addressed. So this actually is not, of course, the extreme of which I'm talking about is maybe a little more rare, but in one sense, it's also, pain is very common in different levels of the pain. I'm just explaining the level of pain. And the reason I'm giving some detail is simply to say, detail makes this real. It's easy mm-hmm. for me to say, like, my past was hard. My dad's past was bad.
Yeah.
And you can fill in whatever blanks you want. I'm mm-hmm. just trying to paint a picture of like, it was actually very hard mm-hmm. and it was objectively not good and objectively painful. And, you know, there's an honoring of like, I'm not trying, I won't overshare certain parts of my dad. So there's a lot I'm leaving out even now. I'm just trying to give context of the fact that this is not as simple as you might think. And it's not as easy as they didn't give me what I wanted. They were these types of people to me. Therefore, I get to be this kind of person to them. Or I'm just the way I am now because what they did to me, like we have a responsibility to know our story. And my mom, you know, less dramatic, but a similar situation, extreme alcoholism, extreme poverty. Her dad was in the war and he was in the army for a very long time, experienced the Vietnam War, experienced a lot of different things, and very poor. And then extreme alcoholism, the middle of five kids, abuse in all sorts of different ways. This is where my mom and my dad find each other. They meet in North Dakota, of all the places, anyone that's listening from there, they meet in North Dakota and they're both 16. They meet in high school and categorically want to get out of their situation. They find Jesus, they find each other, and they get married at 18 and essentially eject from their respective family situations. They get married at 18 and they decide at 20, they're ready to have kids. So they have my brother, they have me, they have my sister. By the time they're 23, they have three children. And that's really young.
It's really fast.
It's really fast. Yeah. I'm in the middle of that. I was born into this situation of two people who were well-meaning, loving, that came from really hard situations themselves. And I will say this to both honor and be honest about my parents. There is so many things that they didn't pass on. I was never sexually abused by my parents, right? I was never, there was a lot of things that never happened that were, that could have happened and would have been like, well, that kind of makes sense. You know, that's what they experienced. So even though they weren't able to give me everything, they protected me from a lot. They protected me from things that could have been far worse. Now, there was still a lot that was there that was very hard and very traumatic. But I have to note, when you look at the history, why knowing your story is important is because it helps you understand that you are a part of a greater thing. And it helps you say, whoa, maybe God was already protecting me and redeeming some of my story before I was even born. We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
And it's so merciful and kind, I think, for you to note that. Because there's a lot that also was hard.
That's taken a lot of years to get to this spot. Yeah. And we're going to talk about in a second what it looks like to really do that work to get to a place where I still feel deeply about this, and I wouldn't say, oh, I'm all fine. I would just say, I've had a lot of time to work through it. You know, you can't go around suffering. You can't go around trauma. We try to go over it. We try to go under it. We try to go around it. All you can do is go through it, and you have to be committed to the process of going through it. And then even on the ups and downs, when you're in the middle of it, it's very hard. But if you can stay committed to go like, I don't know, why, like how I'm going to get through this. I'm just going to keep going. I do think there is hope on the other side, and I'm way more regulated about it. I can be very honest about it on both directions. I can be honest in both directions about like, that was really lame and also very helpful to learn to be in the spot. So I would say you have to know your story. Now, all that said, I grew up in the middle of that chaotic environment. My parents were trying to figure out how do we love Jesus, love each other, and have three children. That's really hard. They're first generation Christians. They're trying to like follow Jesus. And you can only imagine the vices and pain that both my parents had from trying to deal with what they experienced as kids.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And so they're trying to raise kids, protect them, raise them in the way of Jesus. Just to note, it was very complex. I can look at it with grace and mercy at this point of just like, that was hard. But I still grew up in a very chaotic environment in many different ways. And to honor my mom who is alive and my dad who is not, I don't feel it important to go into every detail of how trauma happened to me. But I would just say I was launched into adulthood with a handful of different dispositions and struggles and, you know, basically ways of operating that were not healthy for me, not healthy for my life, my family. And it's vague, but I'm trying to just, again, you can understand and respect. I'm just trying to honor those who need honor. Right. But it's just to say like, I was in adulthood, found myself married at 21, having our son at age 23 and really having very little understanding of my own story. But found myself in this place of over responding or being incredibly anxious or being but unaware. I wouldn't have called it anxiety, like just all of these different reactions that I was living out of, like just anger that I'd experienced living in my body that I didn't even really know, like just was responding out of it. And I knew stuff was wrong. And Elizabeth was good at giving me feedback, like, that's pretty messed up. So I was launched into adulthood realizing like, I don't know how to be a good dad. I don't know how to be a good husband. I really don't know what's even going on.
And real quick, I think you've been very kind to your parents and you're obviously being nonspecific about some things. At that point in your life, did you respect your father? Did you want to become like him?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, but I would say, you know, the truth is, because my dad grew up in the environment he did, he had a lot of vices. The problem with that was that he hid them from everybody. And it wasn't until I was about 17 that everything came out. Like,
so right everything. Before you head into adulthood, like right before you leave the house, you realize there's been a lot of secrets that you have no idea
that I had about. That I had no idea about. And, you know, it's a very jarring experience because you're in a chaotic emotional environment like that, where there's double living going on, what happens, no matter how good the intentions are of the family, disorder only happens. Disorder and chaos happen because you're feeling like, hey, something's really off. So but everyone's saying it's not off.
So you were noticing some of these things.
I was noticing
sort of, but thinking everybody's telling you, no, this isn't actually happening.
Yeah. And it was never as direct as like, hey, this thing's going on. It wasn't direct. It was like, what is that about? And then being told, no, it's not. Everything's fine. We're okay. Everything's okay. Nothing's wrong. But you're like, I feel it.
Yeah.
I'm an intuit. Like I'm more intuitive that way. Like there's something off.
So what I'm hearing, tell me if this is right. Your whole childhood is filled with this idea of, can I believe the reality that's happening or not? Like, which is it?
Yes. Yes.
Because that's got to be very confusing.
It's very confusing. And it's confusing because even now as an adult, it's hard to trust and understand my own feelings because, well, I've been told for so long to just like, don't look here. Like something's weird. Just look the other way.
Don't look here. Wow.
And that love, like it's hard to even put into words. It's easy to say like, that's not that bad. Living it your whole life and try to function as an adult in a real world. you will find how complex that is, because every different dynamic that I couldn't even share, like it's hard to even go into detail. It affects everything mm-hmm. in all the ways that you don't even know. And that's the other part, is like it, you don't know how like layered it is. And so with that dynamic and finding out that my dad's world, my mom's world, like that they were, dad was living one way, mom was trying to keep the family together, very noble in her desires, but like still, even just that is creates a level, it creates these waves or ripple effects of dysfunction that you can't even fully put your finger on. So what ends up happening is you our family fell into the classic, what psychologists would call a dysfunctional family system,
right?
And this is very classic. And if you've done any sort of therapy work, you've probably heard this phrase before, but it's the idea that when there is a chasm at the top being the mom and the dad, there's a chasm of alcoholism or addiction or infidelity. And yet they try to keep everything going and normal and the same. It creates, because it's not meant to be that way, it creates these dysfunctions. So everyone starts playing these different roles to adapt to what happens. My brother became overly responsible. I became very funny to deal with everything in the family, okay. to let the air out of the tire.
Mm.
Nothing is that serious. I was in many ways the clown. There's like these actual roles. I fell into the clown role because right. it was like, okay, well, it doesn't give me too much attention, but it gives me enough. And I wanted attention, but not too much.
Interesting.
And then my sister became a scapegoat and she just started living a different life, but didn't tell anybody. She kind of, followed the pattern, right? And again, these are their short stories to tell, not mine, but I would just say that happened. The dysfunctional family system and the disordered living in our home is not to be underestimated with how impactful and confusing and hard that was. I find myself in adulthood not wanting to repeat this, but also being like, this is all I know. I only know chaotic emotional relationships and right. not to trust myself really. And I don't know what it means to be a good husband. I would try to put myself around guys who I would be like, you seem like a good husband. Like, I'd love to learn from you. Or older men that I'm like, I can trust and respect and learn from. But no, to answer your question, I did not. At that point, especially, there was no respect for my father. Yeah. Because once I learned who he really was, and once I learned the life that he had been living and not telling anyone, especially his kids, it was so painful. It was so painful. And I wanted nothing to do with him for a long time.
I feel like so many people with stories like this ignore it. Like, because it's easier to ignore it. It's easier to move on, especially when you've been told, hey, don't look here. No problems here. When did you realize that you had to confront the past in order to move to the future? And at what point did you realize, I think I'm going to need help to do that?
Yeah, thanks for this is a good question. And it's helpful because I could stay, there's so many layers to this. I could stay in this for a very long time and I don't want to. My hope is to be helpful with this story. But I would say I was 29 and it actually it didn't show up in my home. It showed up in my work. And so what I'll explain is I was a pastor for a lot of years and interestingly enough, pastoral work is very attractive for dysfunctional people. And I'm not sure why. That's not always the case, but it's very attractive for dysfunctional people. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that God is like the ultimate father. He's a father that we always wanted and never had. We've experienced so much healing in the faith that we want other people to experience the same level of dynamic faith change that we have.
Sure.
That's not to say that this is not a blanket statement, right? There's a lot of very healthy, godly, wonderful pastors. I'm just saying it's appealing to a certain demographic of people in pain. And because of that, I was very drawn to ministry, but not, I couldn't say that then. I'm hindsight.
Because you didn't know it then?
I didn't fully know that then, right? But what I learned is there's also a lot of dysfunctional people like me that are in ministry that are very good at communicating and might get a lot of authority and responsibility when emotionally they're not ready for it. They can say a lot, but they can't lead. Their own life doesn't hold up. You know, it's their charisma is actually far stronger than their character. And I started connecting with some, I was working at a particular place and, again, no need to, I won't share names or anything, but I was working directly with a person who is like, had authority over me. Who's my boss, so to speak. And it wasn't in my home, but in my work, this guy was enough. I didn't know this until later, but everything about him, the way he operated, the kind of like subtleties of the way he moved through the world, the way he made decisions, the way he spent his time.
Was he like your dad?
He was like my dad.
Okay. Okay.
And so this led to like one day, I'll tell this story, it's highly embarrassing, but I think very important to understand how crazy things like this can be without you knowing. We are in a meeting, and this is a large church. Like I'm on a team, large church, a lot of people. I have employees that work for me. I'm one of his employees, right? We had a meeting. He had basically said like, okay, hey, I won't make this decision unless X and Y and Z happen, because I know if I make this decision, it will affect your team pretty greatly. So you have my word. We're not going to change this until you say it's ready, because your team has to fulfill the thing. I'm being vague on purpose. That said, we're sitting in a meeting. There's eight guys around the table, some guys and gals around the table. And he just says, hey, we're doing the thing, you know? And I was like, wait. A week ago, you said you were going to wait for me. And I've told you we're not actually ready to do that yet. We will be soon, but like, we're just not there. We don't have this person. We just had to let this person go. We're rehiring. Like, you said you wouldn't do it. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, we're going to do it. And I was like, but you said you wouldn't do it. And you're saying now we're doing it. And like, this isn't a meeting with people. Like truth be told, like everything went, like everyone in the room just went dark. And I just focused in on this dude. I remember. And I have like, I'm a kind person, but like I have a strong eight wing in the sense of Enneagram. I have no problem dealing with conflict or going toe to toe with people. And I'm not saying that in arrogance. Like I just have no, like if there's a problem, we'll deal with it. I'll go for it. I have no problem addressing it. I won't shy away because of discomfort. That said, it was out of hand. And basically he says, no, we're not doing it. And I said, I am categorically not okay with that. Like you told me this wouldn't happen and you lied to my face. And he's like, you need to leave the meeting. So I said,
it's escalating, huh?
It's escalating. Dude, I'm just telling you how crazy this gets. I said, so he says, you need to leave the meeting. And I said, okay, are you sure? Are you sure you want me to leave the meeting? And he said, yes, I'm sure. I said, I just want you to know, if you ask me to leave this meeting, you're telling everyone, young and old in this room, which we have both, that when we disagree with you and when we call you out for not keeping your word, you dismiss us because you do not think that what we have to say matters. Do you understand you're communicating that? Ooh. Yes or no? And he goes, I understand. Leave the meeting. He was not a guy that dealt with conflict. And so I was like, all right, now you know. So I got up and left and was in a fuming state. Like just, why am I so mad? Like I'm trying to figure out why am I so fuming? Why does that make, like all that stuff was hijacking me all the time.
Yeah.
So this didn't happen.
So, and could I note here, tell me if this is true. Even when you're right, and it sounds like you were right in the meeting.
Sure, sure.
Something wrong was happening inside
something
you.
Something so like wrong. It was not from the right place.
Yes.
There was like no
something
wisdom.
More was happening.
Yes. It was energized by pain, decades of pain, right? Like there was no kindness. There was no thoughtfulness. There was no respect of authority. There was no, I couldn't see anything. It was just like blood red. Like I'm going to destroy you for causing me this pain. And what happened, you know, hindsight looking back, he had triggered a deep, deep wound in me, which was,
I see.
And triggering is important because I learned about this a while ago in therapy. Triggering, you know, we use this word. It's a buzzword right now, but being triggered is actually more like time travel. Being triggered means that you are essentially brought back into time to when a moment in time, maybe you can articulate it or not, but a moment in time when you felt that same feeling and your body responds in real time how it responded then, because there hasn't been healing. So triggering is time traveling. Yeah. You time travel back to this moment. So I was time traveling back to when I was a kid and my dad lied to me or told me something, changed his mind, whatever. I don't remember the exact scenario. So it showed up for me in my work and it was problematic.
You said touching the wound. Mm. That's helpful for me. I think a lot of my friends and conversations, the idea of having father wounds, of having a wound that you've lived with and you might not even have known until somebody touches it and you realize, oh my gosh, there's a gaping hole in me.
Yes.
I'm hurt. I haven't done the healing. And I've been reacting out of hurt and pain for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so what ended up happening for me is, to finish that story, because it is interesting. He comes out of the meeting and I go into his office and he's like, you can't ever do that again. You can't disagree with me like that in front of people. And I was like, you're right. That was not cool. Like how I handled that. I was able to come down. I was like, you're right. That wasn't cool. But you lied to me.
Here we are again.
So how do we fix this? He's like, I don't know, but don't do that to me again. Right. So it's that. So I had to just leave it. And I was like, you know, I have to tell my wife, you know how embarrassing that is. You know, it's not only embarrassing. I wasn't even fully wrong. That was the unfortunate.
I know. I'm sort of like, wait a minute.
No, it was embarrassing.
You were right here. Yeah, it's bothering
me. But men listening, fathers, listen. How many times have we done the right thing with the wrong energy?
Yeah.
The right thing with the wrong heart. My heart wasn't to help him. It was to kick him.
You wanted to hurt him.
I wanted to hurt him because he hurt me, right?
Did you want to, is there part of you that wanted to hurt your dad or tell your dad that or address that to your dad? Or did you not even know that
I wouldn't have connected it fully. But after I started doing some of the work, I started to realize, let me move on. Yeah. My work showed up, because I'll answer that question in just a second. Showed up in my work. I was already dysfunctional in many ways at home, meaning like my responses, my own anger, my own, like I was just always like, my nervous system was always revved so high. And what happens when you experience trauma, and I learned this again, like through years of trauma therapy, is when you experience trauma, your baseline, your nervous system lives at like a 7 or an 8. Now, most of the time, if you're a healthy, regulated human, you have stresses in your day and you probably out of a 1 to 10 or like on a scale from 1 to 3, you get stuck in traffic, work happens, maybe you get to a 4 or a 5, right? You have stress, all of us do, but you're not tipping that edge where it like tips you into fight or flight and you're like overdone. When you experience trauma, a lot of times you live at a 7 or an 8. So it only takes traffic. It only takes once.
And suddenly you're in the red zone.
And you're in the red zone.
Right.
This is what I was experiencing all the time.
I see.
And this was on minor and major things all the time.
But you think this is normal to live like this?
I think it's normal because I don't know any different. But everyone giving me feedback that was close to me was like, what's up, dude?
Like, yeah, like, no, you crack easily. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like, and it wasn't even just rage or anger. It was just like unnecessary responses, just always revved high. That said, I did the very humbling and I was so embarrassed. I was so confused, but I was just like, I have to find a therapist. I reached out actually to my brother-in-law, John Mark. And I said, hey, I know you see somebody that you love that you've said is great. Will you just give me his number? So he did. Mm-hmm. And I go to see this guy. I'll never forget this day, but I walk into a very small office in Portland. Think of rainy, dreary Portland. It's a brick office. And it's cozy and small, but it has this chair that looks like everyone in the world has sat in it. It looks like the chair is disease ridden, just been there for like 35 years.
Guy needs to work on interior decor.
He doesn't care. He's working on the soul. He's like,
I love it.
He does not care about the feel. And I walk in, he skips all the niceties, no niceties, just like, no, hi, how are you? What's your name? And I'm like, I'm going to hate this guy. And I mean, because there's no warmth, really. And I sit down in this chair and I'm like, I'm getting a disease as I'm sitting here and I'm listening to him. And he just says to me, so what's going on? And I was like, I don't know what happened with that phrase, but I begin to share everything in exquisite, vivid detail from my childhood to the present as fast as I could. I have no idea why those 5 words, if it is that many, opened up. Yeah, you can count.
If you undo the contraction, it is.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, English major.
So what's
major.
English major here? Yeah.
Thanks, English major. Keeping me honest. He said this, and I'm telling you, man, I told him everything in the world. And I was looking at the clock and there was 5 minutes to spare. He had said nothing. He had listened intently and compassionately the whole time. And he sits there and he just shrugs his shoulders when I'm done. And he says, I can't believe you're standing.
What?
I can't believe you're standing after all this. You must be completely overwhelmed. You must be absolutely shattered inside. And I mean, dude, to this day, like the most impactful, compassionate listening I've ever experienced. And so it was the first time that someone had like given me feedback that I wasn't crazy and said like, you should feel as overwhelmed as you do. And
my goodness,
you should feel as heavy as you do. And then he said, I also want you to know, and I'm just sobbing, like just like years of pent up pain. And he says to me, I want you to know that I rarely give people advice, but I'm going to give you some advice. And I was like,
crap. He's a therapist, but he rarely gives advice.
I mean, there's different types of modalities and therapies.
Sounds like just his listening and affirmation.
Oh, dude.
Moves mountains.
He knew what he was doing. He's a mix of Mr. Rogers, Yoda, and Jesus. Like he looks, he's a 75-year-old dude who like wears a tie and has a mustache. He looks like Mr. Rogers. He's amazing. But no, he knew what he was doing. He knew, yeah. He's been doing this for 40 years with incredible experiences, all to say. And he specifically looked into my soul and said, I want to give you advice because he knew that I didn't know. He knew that this stuff wasn't happening out of he's like, you need direction because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know the unnecessary pain you're going to cause yourself if you don't like wake up to some stuff. So he just simply said to me, because remember, I went in because I thought it was a work problem. And he just said, you need to unhook your pain and your problems from work. And you need to start treating work like you work in a coal mine. You take your pail of lunch, you go do your job, you put your head down, you get through work, and you go home. You do not need extra problems at work. This is not about your work. This is not about your situation. This is not about the person that frustrated you. This is about your father, and this is about your mom, and this is about these different dynamics that you've dealt with. And there's no way that you are going to be able to work through this if you also need to find a job. So you need to put your head down, do your work, and you need to start coming back, and we'll start this work. That was 10 years ago.
Do the work. All right. We're going to pick up in three episodes on vocation and doing the work. And I just want to note for a second, when you first started saying that you need to treat your job like a coal mine, just go there, I'm thinking, you're in ministry, you're a pastor. Wait, this is rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But But suddenly I think I'm having an epiphany. You tell me if I'm right.
Sure.
So many of us with pain in our past, that what happens is we think the circumstances now are the problem, that like that it was a work problem, that it was conflict at work or whatever it is. And what we're trying to tell people right now is what your therapist told you, is that it's not the circumstances right now. You think this is a marriage problem. You think this is a job problem. You think this is a health problem. I think it's a story problem. You need to look back and face the ways that you have been broken and do the work there, because it's not the circumstances right now. Is that what he was saying?
That's exactly what he was saying.
Okay.
And he was trying to help me see that you are thinking that this person is the problem.
You are thinking that the job is causing this trouble.
This is not what's causing the problem.
So much
deeper. This will chase you in every job. And the truth was, I'd had more mild versions of that in every job that I've had.
Okay.
And it was always with a male authority figure that if I looked back, now I didn't connect this to later.
Okay.
Always had elements or versions of my father.
All right. So I have two questions to like talk to to the listeners here. How would you encourage them to start doing the work? If somebody's listening right now and saying, oh my gosh, this is me.
Yeah.
Or they've known it's them, but they haven't started doing the work. How do they start? That's first question. I have another one, but
first question, I would just simply say it starts with you being sick of the patterns and the pain that you're in. You have to get to a spot where you realize it's as bad as it is. I think there's a lot of times there's denial and things that we say that it's not that bad, but you have to remember there's lots of different parts of you. If you think of internal family systems as a modality, as an example, the idea there is like that we have these different parts that tell us different things to keep us safe, but also sometimes they're not always fully honest because they're trying to keep us safe from really wounded parts. And so the idea would be to be honest about the fact that there's a part of you that wants to say that it's not that bad, but there's also another part of you that knows it's as bad as it is. I would say the first step is to pray, ask God to begin to give you a soft heart towards your story and your situation, to know your story. So I think prayer is the first part, because some people hearing this are like, there's no way in the world I'm going to therapy. You fat chance, man. And it's funny.
And praying, right, is naming this, right?
It's absolutely.
When you're saying praying about it, you have to talk to God.
Yeah. But let me just say this, man. You know that this is a problem. You are in denial of that. I knew that this was a problem. It was not that I wasn't aware of how deep it was, but I was not blind. We often just pretend because we're not as aware as we are that we are blind. Most of us have an idea and have had enough feedback in different variations of our life, especially if you're married, to say, no, I got to work on that. Even today, the amount of people that I will meet that are even in some of the fields that you and I get to work in and do, and some of the people we meet, they are a staunch advocate of therapy and have really never gone. I find that very interesting.
Interesting.
All to say, it's one thing to be an advocate for therapy. It's another thing to just shut up and do it. And at the end of the day, what I would encourage you to do, and I know this sounds really harsh, but dude, sometimes I know we need this. We just need to shut up and do the work. You just need to literally put your head down and go to therapy and spend the money and skip the nice thing that you want to buy because you need, like I did that. I'm not trying to be glamorous here. I'm saying it was hard. It's so hard.
Costs money. It costs time. It costs emotionally admitting that you need help. It costs it's moving hard. Past the...
And let me just say this too. One thing I started learning is every time I'd have a really deep therapy session, I would be wrecked for like 2 or 3 days. And when I say wrecked, I mean like I'd get home. I was so exhausted and so tired and snappy, like so like agitated. And then I was exhausted. I would sleep for like 12 hours that night. Like it was bizarre, like stuff that I just never experienced. I'm like, why are you talking about stuff that's making
this,
me so
this is hooking to our last episode too, right? You were carrying a lot of this in your physical body.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which
great.
Probably, if this helps people name that, it probably some of the addictions you're coping with, some of the stress you're carrying, the mental health, it could be anxiety, depression, it could be just odd ways that you feel like your health is not working right.
Yeah.
Is because you haven't dealt with your story and this is all connected.
Yes. You got to know your story. And so maybe to just sum this up, because I want to talk about how, you know, God, obviously we want to build on our blessings. Wherever you're at, I think you need to start praying. That's the first thing. You need to ask if you are married, that's applicable. You need to say, honey, is this true? Where are the things in me? If you want to have a, if you want one of the best and hardest questions to ask your spouse, you need to ask her, what is it like really living with me? Really experience me? Please be gentle with your words, but be very honest. Right? I think that's a very important phrase. Gentle with your words, but very honest. I can only handle so much. And then let her speak into it. And then I would say prayerfully find a Jesus-loving therapist. That's a very important dynamic. If you follow Jesus, you have got to follow somebody with the same worldview.
I really want to emphasize that. I do not claim to know a lot about therapy or a lot about this world. I just know that there is also, particularly after the year and a half I've spent sort of studying the body and thinking about this, and there is a lot of bad advice.
Tons.
There's a lot of bad advice. And when this area is high stakes. Mm-hmm. So I respect a lot of the expertise, but I really appreciate your point of ideally find somebody who loves Jesus.
Yes.
And understands your body and understands your mind and understands therapy and understands how to deal with the past.
Well, you're building on different foundations.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we have to talk about. Like a lot of therapists that I know that would have a different worldview would say, well, the ultimate goal is your happiness and peace.
Yeah.
And I would say, well, as a Jesus follower, that's not my ultimate goal.
It's not.
And biblically, I don't actually believe that. And I don't actually think that is actually something that happens side of heaven fully. Yeah. So anyway, like foundation. So pray, prayerfully consider the idea of therapy, do it. And then if there's only one last thing I could say, hang on for dear life, no matter how hard it is. There will be so many moments that you want to quit. There'll be so many moments that you need a break. It's okay to take a break. There's been times where I've taken months off because I just need a break. That's okay. But being willing to go all the way through and work through these things and having a network of care, asking God, will you give me a friend, a soul friend? Will you give me an understanding spouse? Will you give me a therapist that cares? Will you give me your Holy Spirit to help heal? It is not just a therapist or your wife or a friend. It is the accumulation of these things that bring healing in a deep way. And so I think my prayer and hope, not just prayer and hope, but just like we were, you know, mentioning Joel 2:25, you know, I have a responsibility to build on blessing, but how I got to the space where I feel like I can actually do that, again, like we said, was very different. It's been a hard fought road for me to get to a spot where I feel just like baseline and feel normal. And that is a really, like, I can get really mad at that sometimes. That really bothers me because I'm like, I'm almost 40 and I'm finally feeling like a normal human. Like, that doesn't seem fair.
Well, that's, you know, that's the verse, right? The locusts have eaten something in your past. Like, you don't have something in your past that you were supposed to, that you ought to.
Yes.
Do you, honest question.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the Lord will give it back? I mean, that's what the verse says, is that that he'll give it back, that he'll restore to you the years the locusts have eaten. Do you feel restored yet?
I don't know if I don't know if I'll ever feel fully restored, right? I don't know if any of us feel like, all right. But I will say this. I feel like I feel like I am so grateful I've done the work, am doing the work, and going to continue to do the work. Because it's put me on a trajectory that is healing. I've been healing. And I'm just happier when I'm just with myself. Like, I didn't realize how unhappy I was to just be by myself. Yeah. I would have said things like, I'm an extrovert. I need to be around people. I like people. I like noise. I like all that stuff.
Because you wanted to avoid yourself.
I didn't know that. I didn't know this, but it was just because I wasn't comfortable with myself. I couldn't be comfortable with myself for so many reasons. And I can sit with myself and I enjoy me. But not in a way that's arrogant or prideful. I just mean, I can sit with me and be okay. And I can sit with me in God's presence and be okay. So I would say, has he repaid it in ways that I didn't expect? And I would also say, one of my prayers has been, God, like, don't waste my pain. And what I love about that is I never planned on helping people. I never planned on doing what we're sitting here doing now, having a microphone to talk to people. It surprises me still that people will even listen to this, right? But I think if I'm being very honest, I'm grateful for an outlet to be able to say, guys, it's totally possible. You will not regret it. It will be very hard. It will take a lot of sacrifice, but anything worth doing in life takes those things. It's work and sacrifice. Yeah. And so put your energy in the right place. Know your story so that you can grow from your story.
I have a very different background, which I'll share about in one second.
I was just going to ask,
But I think there's been two things in my life, one with my grandfather and one with a former discipler of mine. My grandfather was a bipolar alcoholic. He had a lot of problems he caused in his family. I had a discipler at some point, I'll also be vague, who really just imploded morally and left the faith. In my anxiety crisis that I've, you know, shared about, there was a point that where I thought, oh, here's what's happening. I'm becoming my grandfather. As if the brokenness of my past, and this was like past, you know, like my mom fortunately did not pass any of this on to me, but there was a point in my anxiety crisis where I thought, oh, my story is really my DNA. Like, I'm destined to become the problems of my ancestors. And one of the most meaningful things that ever happened to me was when I talked to my mom about that, actually.
Okay.
And she looked me in the eye and said, Justin, you are not your grandfather. Mm. You are not. And she, I mean, those were, I don't know if she knew what spiritual authority she carried when she said that.
Wow.
She kind of broke the back of that way of thinking to hear her look at me and say, I know my dad and I know my son and you're not him. And I like walked free of it. Not instantly, but it really deeply changed me. I had another mentor who said the same thing when I talked about my former disciple, or he was like, that's not your destiny. Mm. Just because he trained you in the faith, that doesn't mean you're going to. And I see in you, you know, a lot of your story, I'm just learning along with our listeners.
Yeah.
But a lot of your life, you know, I see now, and it strikes me that you don't believe that you have to become your father.
Mm. No, I don't. I really don't.
But that's abnormal. Most of us, I think, do feel this intuitive sense that we're kind of stuck with our past and we're going to repeat it no matter what.
I hear you on that. I would just say, and I had those moments when I was younger and maybe more, I think this is where, you know, therapy is also education. Like, how does it actually work? Is that how things work? Well, all you have to do is express that to a therapist for 2 seconds for them to say, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
So just so you know, from tons of clinical experience, that's not how things are passed on fully, right? There are elements of what you're saying that are true, but most of it's not.
Well, and I just think it's so encouraging to hear you say that, to hear my mom say it, to watch your life, because I do think what the enemy tells us is the opposite.
Yes.
What the enemy whispers in all of your ears, you know, you who are listening, all of our ears, is that, you know, you're going to become your father.
Yeah.
You're going to repeat the mistakes.
Yeah, your parents got divorced, you're getting divorced.
You are destined, because... Yes. This is the theme of this episode, right? We're a storied people. We live in the grand narrative of creation, fall, redemption, the kingdom to come. And so our DNA, our brain, everything about us, our soul, we long for a story to make sense of the world.
Mm.
And so the enemy comes and wants to tell you a lie about this story and say, that story that you want to be true, that God will actually, I have my Bible open to Romans. It's your Bible. I have the Bible open to Romans 8 this whole time, that then in all things, we know that God will work good for those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. We want so badly to believe that story. And the enemy's like, it's not true. You're stuck with your father's mistakes and your mother's mistakes. And so I just appreciate you saying out loud. I think it breaks the chains of these lies.
Well, let me just add one thing. And then let's talk about building blessing, because we've all been given blessing. And as fathers, part of knowing your story is knowing how to build on the blessing that you've been given, even if you got to it whatever way you got to it. Yes, I would say it was easy to go like, am I going to repeat those patterns? But when it comes to God redeeming, and when it comes to him restoring the years that the locust has eaten, he does it in ways that you're not always fully present to in the moment.
Mm.
Let me give you just one, for instance. I was 17 years old when my dad and my mom, you know, basically shared with us what had been going on in my dad's life. I met my now wife at that same age. And interestingly enough, I met her father. And my father-in-law to this day, right? I needed a dad more than I ever knew during that time.
Mm.
If you've met Phil, he is one of the most fatherly people in the whole world, went without trying. It's just like oozes from his
life.
That's
so good. Hat tip to Phil. I've met him one time and the hug he gave me was like, oh, I've known you forever and I want to know you forever. Yeah, that was a fatherly hug.
That said though, I needed a dad. My dad could not stay in my life in a present way during that handful of years. He was so broken in so many ways and trying to get help and trying to figure things out. He was not present at all. Couldn't be. And I needed to know, like, where do I go to school? How do I do a budget? How do I ask your daughter to marry me? What kind of things do I need to do to like have that life set up? He functionally became a dad to me. God gave me a father when my father couldn't be present.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
I didn't know he was going to be my father-in-law, but Phil is still as equal parts a dad to me as my own dad. And I would just say, which is really interesting without dishonoring my dad at all. My dad was as much of a dad as he could be up to a point, and God knew, like, I think God in his grace, like, understood what I would need knew my dad was not going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And he put somebody in my life. So when I say that he's restored or he redeems, he does it in ways we don't expect.
Yeah.
I needed a dad and I still got one. Now, it wasn't blood. It wasn't what I planned. It was, you know, I can get hung up on the semantics, but I've had a very functional present father and still do to this day, even though my earthly father has passed.
That's a gift. That's a gift.
Yeah.
So we need to know our story
because
God can redeem our brokenness. We need to know it also so he can build on our blessings.
Yes.
I have a very, very different story.
Yes.
People often, you know, ask me because I write about parenting, you know, what were your parents like? And I always don't even really know how to be genuine enough about it because they were so, so good to us. I'm one of six kids.
That's great.
And the dominant fact of my childhood was that I always felt like I had a mom and dad who loved each other and loved us.
That's a gift, dude.
And loved Jesus.
Yeah.
And I get even emotional as I say it because the more I hear of people's stories, the more I'm like almost embarrassed of my blessing, almost like, maybe I shouldn't talk about it. It's kind of like if you make more money than somebody else and you sort of get embarrassed to talk about it. Cause like,
I don't think you can I just say this.
Yeah.
You should, Elizabeth's the same way. You know, she comes from a similar situation and she would say the same thing about her upbringing. Just on the embarrassment, I don't think you need to be embarrassed, but I do think you have a stewardship, right? Like I think there's something to steward to help. Because you come into this world without as many scars and wounds. You just do. Mm-hmm. And that's objectively true. And that's what it is. But I think there's also, you're redeeming there's a stewardship that I think you hold.
No, I actually think there's a sobriety and even like a scariness to that. Because I think if anybody who's listening who maybe feels more like my side of the story, you've been given a lot. You know, the parable of the talents is a bit frightening.
Ooh.
The parable of the people who have been given much will be asked of them is a kind of sobering. There's there was a way in which you're like, oh, okay, now, well, and this is part of my story. Will I squander that blessing? You know, because I'm messed up, you know, I'm broken. Yeah. Even though I've been given so much, I'm broken. And so, you know, here's just one vignette from my childhood. My dad, he was also a lawyer. Mm-hmm. He went into politics when I was in late middle school and high school. He was the Attorney General of Virginia. And, so I knew my dad was of influence. I also knew he was greatly devoted to Jesus. I mean, one of the norms of my upbringing was I would walk, you know, upstairs in the morning and find him in his study reading his Bible. And in high school, he decided to run for governor. Okay. So this is like my senior year of high school. He ended up losing the race for governor of Virginia. And I was just like so sad, a crush. I cried myself to sleep that night.
No way. As an 18-year-old.
Yeah. I was about to, maybe it was the middle of my senior year. I can't remember.
Okay.
But yeah, as a 17-year-old, I cried myself to sleep because I so wanted to live in the governor's mansion in Virginia. I was going to get a bodyguard. I mean, I thought this was going to be great for my social life. It would have been.
I see the incentive.
So, I am like so busted.
Having a bodyguard would be pretty cool.
It sounded pretty cool.
That'd be rad.
In retrospect, I think it was so good for me that I did not get to be the son of a governor. I think it would have not served me well in college. So let's just leave it at that.
Fair.
I walk up the next morning and they mercifully let us not go to school that day. So dad is making pancakes for everybody, like whistling in the kitchen. And over breakfast, he sits down and tells us what he was reading about in his quiet time and how excited he is for what the Lord, you know, had for him in the next season. And there are times like that that you don't even know at the time that anything important is happening. This is, guys, kind of the theme of the podcast, being intentional fathers in the little moments. You don't maybe know anything miraculous is happening. But I would think about this for years to come, that in one of the moments that might be an identity crisis for my dad. Mm. I mean, we know that politicians get weird. They have huge ups and downs. My dad was really steady. He really wasn't weird. Still isn't.
It's and probably why he didn't win.
I think a lot. Yeah. Maybe you need to be a little more weird to win.
Yeah.
I think a lot about how much it served him as a father to be rooted in the scriptures, devoted to prayer, following Jesus before he followed the whims of career and the whims of the, you know, the body politic, because he knew who he was. Hmm. You know, he knew who he was. And the interesting thing about this is, so during that same period in high school, he was starting to regularly invite me into his quiet times. So this is part of like, I think him, I see now him calling me, you know, into manhood. He would about once a week, I think, invite me to come read the Bible with him. That coincided with the period of my life. I'm a senior where I am rebelling against everything they've ever taught me, right? Mm. I'm living a double life. I'm doing things they don't know about. I'm full of shames. Like kind of like all the things that you think you hope your kids don't do in high school. Like I'm sure you're thinking them now. I was dabbling in all those things. I was embarrassed of, you know, sexually of what was happening in my life. I was embarrassed of, you know, drugs and alcohol and things that I was experimenting with. I was living a double life.
Mm.
I don't think my dad was completely unaware of this. And yet he invited me. I thought he was. I thinking back, I don't know. He invited me over and over into this space of prayer. And some mornings I was like falling asleep. I wasn't even paying attention. I don't remember, you know, many of the prayers we prayed, what we read. I just remember that he did it. Okay.
That's very encouraging.
So yeah, now fast forward. In college, I finally really break down and I realize this life is not working for me.
Mm.
And I met a guy in college who basically got a bunch of guys together and was like, we need to tell the stories of our fathers.
Whoa.
And I was like, what? Like, is this a thing? Okay. And everybody shared stories of like brokenness, of like abuse, of trauma, of their dad's leaving, of their dad's alcoholism. And they get to me. And by the way, all these guys are like mature Christians who are like walking with the Lord, sharing about their traumas. And it gets to me and I share about a dad who I'm so proud of and I love, and they're looking at me who's like, you know, I'm out drinking. I'm out with girls. Like I'm barely sort of like on the edge of Christian community. I'm coming to this men's group and I'm sharing the story and I'm thinking, one, I'm squandering my blessing. Like I am the prodigal.
Mm.
And two, I don't want to be like me. You know who I want to be like? And I realized that literally sitting in a group of guys talking about their dads, I want to be like my dad.
Whoa.
What am I doing with my life? And it was such, I share that for two reasons. One, if anybody is listening and they feel like their kids are going off the rails and like, oh, how nice it is to talk about fatherhood, but actually like I have a kid who's fumbling everything I gave them. Well, I think that's probably how my dad felt about me.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord, the years that the locusts ate, then he restored to me through the inheritance of my father. Because I looked at him and I said, okay, I see where my life is going and I see where my dad is. And I don't like my path. I want to find him again. I want to, and I really started to, that was the year in college. That was the change of my freshman to sophomore year where I look at that and I say, I knew about Jesus. I believed him. That's when I started following Jesus for the first time. And I did it by following my dad. I wrote him a letter.
Oh yeah. Tell me about this.
Yeah. I wrote him a letter, kind of confessing a lot of things that was going on in my life. And, telling him that I wanted to follow Jesus and be more like him and like Jesus. And, incredible thing happened that summer. He sat down with me and, he said, by the way, I forgive you. You know, you asked for my forgiveness in the letter, forgive you. And, you know, I made a lot of mistakes too. And he started being honest with me about some of his mistakes. And we entered into a new space of feeling like, oh, he had brokenness and yet he gave me so much.
Mm.
I just broke a lot of stuff and yet the Lord has given me so much. And the Lord just used that time to turn me around and set me on a path that really has been my life ever since of honoring my father, of trying to follow in his footsteps. And by doing that, follow Jesus. And I'll close with this. It was amazing to me. My dad gave me his Bible years later. I can't remember when, but it's the one I keep on my desk when I write. And I was writing about in the Common Rule, the habit of scripture before phone. We talked about a couple episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the Bible. I open up the Bible that my dad used and I see, I'm not a big like, open the Bible and just ascribe meaning to whatever you find. But I open the Bible and it falls open. I think it was to Colossians and it was like January, you know, 1, 2002, I think it was, I can't remember. Read this chapter, read that chapter. And I'm like, these were the days right after he lost the governor's election. He was in the Word reading these passages and it just brought to mind the way that his rhythm of the scriptures anchored him. And then I look closely and I see with Justin underneath these annotations, with Justin, with Justin. And again, I don't remember.
That's so cool.
I don't remember reading these passages with him.
Of course you don't.
I don't remember the prayers we prayed, but you know what I do remember? I remember having a dad who loved me when I felt so unlovable and so broken and so hidden. And I remember having a dad who woke me up and said, come in with me, come pray with me, when I felt like I was scared to be found. And even though I don't remember any of those passages, I remember the feeling of having a father that wanted to love me even when I felt unlovable. And I think that more than anything was the inheritance of a father who loves Jesus. And I would just encourage anybody listening, whether you're broken past or whether you've received a lot and much will be asked of you, the possibility that we have to pass the love of Jesus on to our children changes their future. It changes generations. We don't have to be our past.
No.
We don't even have to be our current brokenness. That love of the Father who invites us to him, even when we are broken, is the thing that makes us the kinds of fathers who can say, okay, I'm going to change the generations of sin. I'm going to change my sin. I'm going to follow Jesus into the future. And that is the gift of grace. That is newness.
I love that. I am thinking of that. The next episode is going to be a ton about how to actually live into this, but so we won't go into depth here, but you know, some of the practical things to take away today, do the work. Remember, you are not fill in the blank, your grandfather, your father, your situation, and then tell your story.
Tell your story. Find somebody to tell your story to. That the guys sitting around, who one guy just said, we're all going to tell the stories of our fathers. That moment changed my life. So get with a close friend, a spiritual friend, like we talked about a couple episodes ago. Get with a pastor, Bible study, somebody, anybody. Maybe it's your spouse.
Yeah.
And if you've never told the story of your father or your family, tell it.
Yeah.
And maybe write a letter.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, for you, you wrote a letter to your dad apologizing, saying what you wanted to do and how you respected him. You know, we were talking before we recorded. I said, I also wrote a letter.
Yeah, your letter was quite different, right?
My letter had to be different, right? Because I wasn't writing a letter of, I want to be more like you. I had to write a letter forgiving my father, right? And so the two stories on that, the 2 seconds on that is my dad died of cancer 3 years ago. That's a whole other story in itself, but it was a journey of dying to cancer, which many people do. It's usually a slow process, which makes it so hard. He was in and out of the hospital all the time. And one particular morning I woke up and my mom texted and said, hey, he's back in the hospital again. And so I had this sense come over me, like, he could die any day, even this week. I don't want him to die thinking that I haven't forgiven him. Now, this is like 8 years, 7 years into the work, maybe, you know, that we're talking about the deep work. And I just had this sense like I need to tell him that I forgive him. And I need to tell him the things that he did teach me. And I need to tell him the things that I am thankful for, even though it's taken a long time to see it. And so Elizabeth and I drove 3 hours to get to their house and actually get to the hospital that he was in. And I sat there with my journal open and a lot of tears and just needed to make sure that he knew that I did forgive him. And was honest. I was really honest about how hard everything was. But I also was clear that I did forgive him. And I feel to this day that that's true. And it doesn't hold the activating weight that it once did to even talk about it.
Yeah.
I can hold it and go, yeah, it was lame. I wish it didn't happen. And it also is something that I can see and know and understand and have grace for. So my story isn't one of perfection. It was very messy and really fought with a lot of immaturities and a lot of pain. But that said, I say that story to say most of us need to write a letter.
Yeah.
It just might look very different. I needed to write a letter.
That one sounds important. A lot harder. I was eager to give mine to my dad. I imagine you and many others, this is going to be one of the hardest things they write. And some people actually aren't going to be able to deliver it. So you might just need to write that letter and your dad is either gone, he might be dead, or might not want the letter, but
you can still
they should write it anyway, right?
You can still write it and you can pray that their heart might be open to it. So As we close, we want you to remember, as a father, your fatherhood needs your story. You need to know your story for your fatherhood to grow. And remember, you know, I think this is the phrase we started, but your past affects your fatherhood now, and God helps you build on the blessings and redeems your brokenness. That is so encouraging to me. Yeah. So wherever you're at, wherever you're listening, thank you for taking the time. Be honest about your story. Do the work. Remember, you're not whoever you think you are, and tell your story.
Amen.
Come back next week. We're going to talk about some more positive things.
We'll get upbeat and practical next week, but for now, we'll leave it here.